And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel.
I'm the Delta variant.
Oh.
Miss Delta variant, and I'm coming for you girls. I'm coming.
Ms. Delta, with an MZ.
Yeah,
I like people who spell their names like that, Ms.
She's genderqueer. She's MX.
I like the Delta variant approaching in a genteel, kind way before she ravages us.
Aida, I'm here to torment you again.
What do you have now?
You know what time it is.
No. Oh, my God. Here you go. I want to be happy for you and celebrate you, but I've grown tired of doing it. So
it's my actual birthday.
Today. As today. The Keep It recording drops. Or today yes. is your birthday.
As the Keep It recording drops.
Yeah, I was going to say. So we're giving 28th.
Yeah, it's giving 28th. It's giving number 2, it's giving number 8, it's giving 3 days before the end of July. I don't know. I'm trying to.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sesame Street character. Don't know what you're doing for us.
Well, happy birthday. But also, I just want to say that I am absolutely sickened to learn that both Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are Leos. That
oh, no. Well,
this dovetails right with what Ira wants.
A-Rod was a Leo, too, by the way.
Oh, well. I'm throwing my dossiers all over the place. Everything's crazy.
When they got together, I want to point out that a friend of mine, Melanie, was like, I don't know how I feel about this. And I was like, baby, Ben is an August Leo, and this is an iconic coupling.
Yeah.
But also, so we're talking about Ben and J-Lo seemingly staging every kind of Jenny from the Block reboot
exactly.
on the planet. Do we think it's part of some grand stunt? Is this going to be some like...
I think it's a stunt, but I think that they're also back together. They're okay, stunt queens. They're Leos.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we know them. This is the man who was staging Dunkin' Donuts photos throughout the quarantine, walking through the park with Miss...
Ana de Armas
yes,
on his
you know,
Armas.
They truly actually said, you know what? We're going to give you the Sean and Camila Cabello that you really want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. We've been waiting for this. You know, I am worried about Ben and maybe and Jennifer as well recessing into bad old romantic habits. I just don't like the idea of this many years later you returning to a past lover. Doesn't seem healthy. Doesn't seem healthy at all.
Well, you know, recently Sammy has been sleeping with Lucas again on Days of Our Lives. And although she's being blackmailed by Kristen DiMera and also Nicole Black, Nicole Walker, who's married to her brother, it seems right, you know?
Yeah. And soaps are like a great metric for how life should go.
Right.
I would say, yeah. You know.
Absolutely.
The amount of relatability in there really threw me. No, I just want to say. I'm fine with it all being a stunt. If it is a stunt, it's clear they're together in some way. But like, if this all turns out to be promo for like some
Geely 2, I'd see it.
For like some Billboard number 178 hit for J-Lo featuring Iggy Azalea. When's she going to reunite with the charts? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I think there's something exciting about our obsession with nostalgia and the fact that one of the major couples from that era is like back.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels human in a sense that they were, you know, caught up in this whirlwind of like celebrity and like the media and everything. And they're older now. So they've had time to, you know, assess what that meant to them and like how to deal with it since then, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think also we just miss a couple that seems powerful. Like you just brought up Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello, to which I say, who care? I mean, like, I don't participate. I don't want to see more. You know what I mean? Like, it was a fine picture one time. But Ben and J-Lo, there's something dark and percolating about them always.
Yeah, they have the energy of a too much sugar diet. They looked lethargic walking around in the streets being snapped by paparazzi with their empty coffee cups. That's why they were lethargic. They weren't even drinking any damn coffee. There's nothing in them. Meanwhile, Ben was running on Dunkin'.
See?
And like soft little J-Lo ass grabs that keep getting photographed and Throwback Thursdays are being made. I like it. I like it. You know, I am fully in support.
I do want to use this to launch a preemptive Keep It, though, to the social media furor that has happened from our good sis Issa Rae's wedding. Because I am so happy for her. And you know, we love Capricorn behavior. That's the kind that will drop a whole husband without you knowing about it. Aida over there in Miami about to shoot rap shit. I bet you ain't know nothing.
A whole show. You know what's great? It's actually, I will divulge what I can, what I actually knew. It's not like I knew anything. I was in the writer's room for Rap Shit, and every third person who had like written for Insecure or was related to Issa was like, yeah, I'm going to France right after we wrap the room. I'm going overseas. I'm like, bitch, where are y'all all going? And I had to just slowly put it together that somebody was probably getting married. And who was the link? Issa Rae. So there was never an announcement, you know, and I know I just met her, but I am sad I wasn't invited. But all that being said, yeah, I think I'd piece it together.
You know, I used to work for her on an old website. I interviewed her for Cosmo. You know, I could have gotten the press invite, but...
okay. She was here last year. I'm very happy. We interviewed her last year. Where was that?
Yes! Interviewed her last year. By the way, over Zoom with no camera on. So, you know, she was probably wedding planning.
At the time.
Probably wedding planning.
I'm trying like, on dresses.
In the background.
I love that you're sitting there piecing it all together like Shelby Woo in the writer's room, though. You know, that's fun.
Truly. But the preemptive keep it goes to people who just can't enjoy this goddamn wedding. Why does this have to become a discourse about how y'all share too much on social media? You need to be more like Issa. I'm like, there is always some extrapolation from people online being like, y'all share too much, you know, you need to be doing this. And it's like, nobody cares if you drop your secret husband on the internet, baby. Like, this is Issa Rae, okay?
Because he work at Menards. Right? That's all he do. We don't care what he do. How would people define themselves if they weren't critiquing other people, Ira? If they weren't, how are they going to have an identity? They have to say these things.
I just find the hilarity in everyone enjoying Issa's privacy while also saying that, nobody's doing it like J-Lo. Which is it, baby?
Yeah.
What do y'all want?
It's just it's Leo and Capricorn behavior, okay?
Yeah.
Let them live.
Yeah, J-Lo's grid on Insta is stocked right now. So,
if
that's doing it right, okay, but let's be consistent.
But also, how much do we know about that bitch either?
No, again, it's a stunt. It's like Evel Knievel. She does the trick and we don't know what went into it. Is there steroids? We have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know what I fully don't understand? Why are people shocked when celebrities pop up married? That's the only way to do so. I'm not going to announce to the world, save the date. Like, Issa had her little ring on. She was not hiding it. I just don't think that people really clocked that it was going to happen this weekend. Beyond that, remember when Niecy Nash popped up? Married and gay? Nobody was yelling this much. Shut up.
Right? Niecy Nash gave us a whole wife.
A whole sexuality change.
She gave us a whole new leaf. Yeah.
Niecy is a Pisces. Okay.
She's a Reese's Pisces.
Aww. Love that for her. Anyway.
Yeah, that's gay.
Let people do what the fuck they want on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, now is the point when we're upset with oversharing. I just, again, I'm in Fire Island vacationing, and people are,
shall
we say.
There's something wrong with that beach.
Thanks for joining us, Lewis.
People are unhinged here, and I sometimes am one of them.
People are having sex behind Lewis right now, probably.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're not somewhere in a parking lot sucking dick, Lewis. What's going on?
right behind me on this Zoom, you should be able to pantomime out like sex images behind me. Shadows just all over the island.
The spirits, the residues.
My entire idea of oversharing is completely changed now that I've been here and know anatomically everything about the gay community.
You and Joel Schumacher.
That's right, yes.
All right. We have a exciting episode today. We're going to talk about gay shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not just Fire Island, but we're talking about Lil Nas X. His new video, Industry Baby.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about famous homophobe, DaBaby.
Jonathan.
Is that his real name?
Yeah, that's his real name, and that's the only way I'm going to refer to him.
That's how I want to refer to him now. I hate saying DaBaby.
Or he gay, so he gives me DaMaybe.
Well, listen, we'll get into that. And also, we'll be joined by Sanaa Lathan.
Ooh. The luck, the fortune of that.
Yale's own Sanaa Lathan.
Yes, yes. Listen, if you can't go to Tisch, go to Yale. That's what I always say.
Oh, yeah. Good backup school. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my backup.
Meryl couldn't get into Tisch. You know it. Yeah.
You know she couldn't.
Sigourney, she's like, it's a no for me. I'll try Yale instead.
The French lieutenant's rejection.
Shut up.
And there'll be plenty more for us to talk about. So we'll be right back. If you haven't heard yet somehow, we at Keep It want your opinions. Well, sort of. We want to know more about you, what you think of our show, and what we can do to make it better for you. So, if you love it, tell us. And if you hate it, still tell us, but not to me, Aida, or Lewis directly. Yeah. Find the survey at crooked.com/survey. And as a thank you, we're offering a 20% discount on any order from the Crooked Store for everyone who fills out the survey. So,
included with a photo of John Lovett and his dogs. Free.
Find the survey at crooked.com/survey. Do we think that Lil Nas X is trying to restart the Village People himself? He's been a cowboy.
Wow.
Santa Claus.
Yes.
He's played the devil.
He's been up in space.
Come on now. Mm-hmm. Now, Prisoner.
If this is how we got a remake of the movie Can't Stop the Music, which if you haven't seen it, you haven't been properly traumatized, and I invite you to learn for yourself. Directed by Rhoda's own Nancy Walker.
Do you think Caitlyn Jenner will be in it again?
Yes. Caitlyn Jenner in her acting debut and finale. mercifully.
I'm sure she's still in SAG because of Keeping Up with the Kardashians and the governor race.
Right. As you know, she's very pro-union.
I'm pretty sure the governor's race is probably just a Jackass sequel.
Oh, my gosh.
But Lil Nas X continues to check all the boxes next to each of your sexual fantasies. In his new music video for Industry Baby, he took us all to Montero State Prison to redeem our Shawshanks.
Now what Shawshank Redemption got to do with this gay little video?
That movie was full faggotry.
It was a lot going on. What
okay,
do you mean?
Okay. Tim was robbing on the dick.
What do you mean just get to live
okay?
it? Just get to...
Can I tell you something crazy? Now a part of the show is we announce our blind spots. I have never seen Shawshank Redemption.
Wow.
And I just want to say this while it's on my mind.
Lewis, we are the same age, and there is at least a 10-year period where the Shawshank Redemption was always on television.
No, and by the way, I've seen all the other movies that have been on TV.
I've never seen it all the way through. Mm. I've seen different segments of it.
Okay.
No, but like I've seen all the other movies we have like that, I've seen a million times. Like, why have I seen the movie Mo Money 75 times? I have no idea. But
you chose up.
Yeah,
you
right.
Chose up.
You did. It's much better.
Space for only one prison film.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say also before we move on, I have not seen The Little Mermaid. That is what I will do next for this. Anyway.
Nigga.
Wouldn't that crazy? I can't believe it either.
That's the first movie I ever saw in theaters.
That makes sense.
That'd be interesting. Lewis, what was the first movie you ever saw in theaters? Do you know?
Ooh,
if you remember?
Gosh. I remember seeing they re-released Pinocchio, I believe. So I think I was a really little kid for that. Yeah.
Jiminy Cricket.
That's the one.
You guys remember Chicken Run?
Of course. Yeah.
Yes. That was Come the first film I saw. I remember being, you know, those traumatic in the way that it's just a happy experience. So you remember every detail of it. Could tell you everything about my surroundings as a 2-year-old at Chicken Run.
Yeah, Chicken Run was a cute movie.
It was a really cute movie. I actually do like that film.
We need more
Look
claymation.
At you with some
I don't
taste.
Care. I don't care how long it takes, y'all. I don't care how long your little stop motion movies take. Figure it out. I want more.
I feel like they had a new Wallace and Gromit every other day back when we were kids. So it must be kind of easy.
It has to be.
Every once in a while, you meet somebody who looks exactly like Wallace from Wallace and Gromit. There's just something about eye shape that happens, and I can't get it off my mind when that happens. If I'm talking to one of you, just let you know, I'm thinking about your stop motion face. I'm sorry.
Are they all on Fire Island?
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you mean you meet people? I've never experienced that.
Okay, I don't go around looking for Calibans.
Well, let me just say, if your pupils are expanded to a certain size, if you know what I mean, you might be a Wallace and Gromit character, you know? Okay, anyway, Lil Nas X, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Lil Nas X's video, you know, has a fictitious court trial where, you know, he's sent to jail for his Satan shoes, you know, after being sued by Nike. And then he goes to prison and he is dancing with a lot of naked men. And then also Jack Harlow shows up. So
what is all this narrative? Like, this was written by Charlie Kaufman. There's so much going on.
There's a lot
giving
going
adaptation.
On the video, actually.
I didn't even know that it was because of his shoes that he was getting like a copyright suit. I thought he was just popping up in jail.
Mm.
It's a lot. Mm. It's a lot. But I love this video.
It's his telephone, to be honest.
It's very telephone. Very telephone.
Yeah. I love this video. It's actually my favorite of his. It may be my favorite song of his too, actually. It just has like the swagger you'd expect from a young pop/hip-hop star.
Yes.
You know, feels very much like of the moment. It's fun. Jack Harlow also matches his energy on the song, too. Like, I like his verse, too.
So refreshing.
And that white man is fine.
Also, just to be clear.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a particular type of fine, but we'll get into that. Yeah. Go ahead, Lewis.
If there's any furor or busy discussion about this video, it's really about the naked scene with, like, everybody dancing naked. And I think that really is the raddest, most, like, not subversive, but coolest part of the video, because who would expect that? Like, in a way, like, a prison set video almost just makes sense. Like, there's a bunch of people, you know, like, we have, like, viral videos of people dancing in prison and stuff. Like, you could think of that as a music video, but dancing naked in prison, that's, like, the extra step that makes Lil Nas X, like, a little cleverer and a little more surprising and exciting than other pop stars.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get into some of the asinine criticisms. One of them, sorry, I sound like People Magazine, calling them criticisms instead of homophobia. Nas called out People's headline where they said that Lil Nas X responds to criticism of his industry baby video. Like, no, bitch, he was responding to homophobia. The part that is like that catch-22 of homophobia from Ashy Black Men is the fact that they are mad that it's all black men in this prison dancing with him. It's like the feminization of black men, etc., this and that. But it's also, they would be completely upset if he was dancing with white men.
100%. 100%.
Right.
And he knows that. That's what I love about his age group and where he's at, is he 100% understands that he needs to have only black dancers. And also, at a certain point, this is the community that he's in. Like, he's going to have gay men dancing with him.
Uh-huh.
What else is he going to have with him? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It's also not like you can't throw an Adidas shoe and catch a straight man in a video surrounded by women.
Right. In fact, I expect that in any music video I ever see. My entire idea of a music video is exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was quick to point out, too, that people are very silent when they have an entire catalog about, like, rapping, about sleeping with multiple women, but all of a sudden he's doing it with Ben is a problem, and it's really just homophobia there. But this is also the same critiques that female rappers get.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, don't y'all have anything to rap about except your pussy?
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, but what do y'all rap about? It's just this whole conundrum and sort of just like, you're damned if you do thing if you're not.
It reminds me of when people talk about female stand-ups, or like classically what they've done.
Exactly.
When, like, all you can do is talk about your period or whatever. It's like, the only reason this is even registering to you is because it's not what a man talks about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they talk about their dick all the time.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And women who won't date them.
Have I already talked about my new nuisance when it comes to people talking about stand-up comedy? Here it is. Pardon me if I've already gone into this. And I know I bring up the name Paula Poundstone all the time, but it's coming up again.
Again, somebody has to.
More than so. I bring up Tish, to be honest.
I know. People bring up Paula Poundstone as some novelty comic who talked about Pop-Tarts and like minor, unimportant, nuisance-like things, mm-hmm. and pretend that's like an 80s, 90s fad. Meanwhile, they still lionize Jerry Seinfeld, who did the same thing. Jerry Seinfeld is not funnier than Paula Poundstone, and Paula Poundstone is still hilarious and wait, don't tell me, and unproblematically so. All I'm saying is she should be kind of at the same mantle as him, and one is treated as a demigod, and one is treated as a novelty item.
Mm-hmm.
What do y'all think about the video in general? Controversy aside.
Yeah, that all aside, I watched the video smiling the entire time. Lil Nas X has finally found his groove. I know that when Old Town Road came out, I'm sure he didn't expect that just 2-3 years later he would be doing these large productions with all this choreography. He's hitting his marks.
Mm-hmm.
He's just getting more comfortable in his body and in his stardom every single time we get art from him.
Yeah.
And I love it.
The choreography is much more fluid here.
Definitely.
I will still say his live performances aren't as fluid, but this was fun. I love this choreography. Sean Bankhead,
Yeah, boom kek. Lil Nas is here to stay, and I'm fortunate that we get to watch his evolution. My favorite part of the video, though, is this hammering us with gay shit, and then when it's Jack's time, he's in the cell with a whole woman just all over him. Yeah, I'll do your little gay video, but...
That's how the phone call went. I'll do your little gay video.
However...
I found that so funny, but also appropriate because that's exactly what you need to see, right? Like, the mm-hmm. video has the gay shit in it because Lil Nas X is gay. And then Jack Harlow is not, so he's with a woman, you know? And there's no queer baiting thing here. There's no having to get, it's a cosign from a straight man who is a star in the rap community at the moment.
Oh,
it's a shame that it couldn't be from, you know, someone black. But
yeah, and ultimately we'll get into this, I'm sure, when we talk about homophobia and the Jonathan DaBaby conversation. But it's very clear to me that this is still a white rapper that had to do this. Like, we didn't get a JID, we didn't get a Guap Dad 4000, we didn't get any of these like Atlanta boys who represent masculinity in a certain way. Like, we didn't get any of that. We got Jack Harlow, who is a goofy rapper as well. Like, it wouldn't affect his brand. It would only help him, you know? So there is that aspect to it as well.
And also, Jack Harlow said that Nas wrote the whole treatment for the video. I followed his lead every step of the way. If he had asked me to be in that shower scene, I would have been in that shower scene. I just let the mastermind cook. Honored to be a part of it. And that is just what's so beautiful about the video. You know, like, he's been so supportive of Nas throughout this entire thing. He looks hot in the video. He's like, at no point in the video are you like imagining Jack Harlow's about to be like sucking dick in the corner, you know? So, like, he's like completely fine being in this video. And it's, I guess we can get into this like goddamn DaBaby shit now, but it's so irritating that it had to be a white rapper, because I think that we know that historically in media and representations of queerness, there's a lack of non-white representation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it allows homophobes to sort of imply that, you know, like, queerness is like only sort of this white thing. And it still feels almost, you know, like you just have the white person co-signing it, right? You know, and it just reminds you of the fact that, like, you know, you end up with, in the media, seeing, you know, like, more gay men having best friends who are, like, straight white men in media than you see, like, straight black men represented as, like, having a gay best friend, you know? And I think that's why I always think about how Terrell Alvin McCraney's play Choir Boy, like, had me sobbing at the end, because it was about a gay student at this, you know, like, prep school, and his best friend in it, the person who comforts him at the end, is this, you know, very masculine straight guy who's at the school, you know? And it was like an image you never see represented before.
And I think lastly with the Jack Harlow conversation is that we talk a lot about whether white people should be in predominantly black genres like rap. If we were going to pick someone who exemplifies it, what I would say perfectly, I think it just has to be Jack Harlow. Like, he's someone who goes out of his way, who of course is from Louisville, Kentucky, and led marches for Breonna Taylor, allows the people that he collaborates with, black people, to take the lead and guide him. Like, he understands. He's just a lot more aware than I think than like an Eminem or other white rappers who are trying to posture in a certain way. It's refreshing.
Right. It's nice to have him in this video, as opposed to when I was younger in high school, and Lewis and I were younger in high school, you know, like, seeing, like enjoying Eminem, because, like, Eminem's albums are so great, but, you know, Jack Harlow's not, you know, calling me a faggot every other minute, you know?
It's like, or starring in films where he's like, I'm gonna be better than all these other black rappers, you know? Jack Harlow gives me, like, he was nerdy and goofy, and he reminds us in every single song that he's getting cuter. So, goofy in high school, and now he's coming, you know, and stepping into his own.
Those lips.
That slightly greasy hair.
You know, he looks just like Paul McCallion.
Who?
Oh, yes, from Twitter's own. I just want to say, it's got to be hard for Lil Nas X, because I feel like, the nature of this video is so, like, dirty and scandalous or whatever, but for, like, the people it's intended for, the reaction is basically like, lulz, like, we enjoy it, like, you know, whatever. And then there's only this other side of the chasm, which is extreme outrage, and I almost wish he could find a happy medium of listeners who are, like, properly excited. And I mean, not that he doesn't have that, but I'm saying it's meant to titillate, and for the people it's meant to titillate, we're like, ah ha ha, lol, good job.
I will say that it reminds me of when Madonna did her poor Instagram where she said, you know, like, did it first about the kissing Britney and Christina. Kissed two black men on the BET Awards stage. And this video reminds me of that, too. It is not to say that Madonna wasn't pushing an envelope, you know, in the 90s, you know, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, her videos. But there's something about this just feels more dangerous.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And less complete. It's completely for shock value too, but it's shock value where it feels like it's helping change a conversation. And I feel like it's been a while since Madonna has done something for shock value that was to change a conversation. You know, we've far past the sex era is what I'll say. Because the kiss with Britney and Christina was just titillation. It wasn't the same thing as kissing two black men on the stage of the BET Awards.
I remember watching that live and just being like, this feels like a shadow of a shadow of a shadow of the former Madonna. Of like, you're right. Of super pointed agitation. But yeah.
And there's the whole point that entire kiss was by MTV. Then it went to Justin Timberlake's reaction because the whole point of it was to see like what Britney's ex-boyfriend thought about it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We didn't even see the Christina kiss.
And it's not like he gave them disdain. It was like shock and fetishization still that was occurring. Yeah. Like, that's how you know that this is entirely different. But shouts out Lil Nas X for knowing his positionality and continuing to push the envelope. Mm.
Meanwhile,
knowing that he has the opportunity to do so.
No shout out to that nigga DaBaby. who at Rolling Loud, you know, the music festival in Miami on Sunday, went on a very random rant about gay people and AIDS, which makes no goddamn sense. He says, if you didn't show up today with HIV, AIDS, or any of them deadly sexual transmitted diseases that'll make you die in 2 to 3 weeks, then put your cell phone lighter up.
Let's start that. Can we start there? Can we start
Raggedy
there?
Raggedy ass man.
First of
what?
All, HIV, AIDS killing you in 2 to 3 weeks. Like, are you Andrew Dice Clay? This is like the oldest.
Not even in the normal heart.
Yes.
Okay. Like, literally, not even in any terrifying, like, AIDS melodrama. Do you die in 2 to 3 weeks, bitch?
Boo. And also, I hate shout out if you didn't show up with HIV. Like, you didn't show up. Like, you just gonna leave your shit at home, bring all your T cells. It makes no sense.
I left my AIDS at home, Aida.
Good, as you should.
I left my AIDS and my ID at home, so I can't drink tonight.
Sorry, girl. Also, first of all, you are at a festival with 100,000 people. Most of y'all are unvaccinated, hanging in a crowd. Y'all are dying in 2 to 3 weeks, okay? All of y'all. All of y'all.
Ooh. Also, not even the gay connotation. Like, it is incredibly dangerous for a black man to say that, given how hard the HIV and AIDS epidemic affected heterosexual black people as well and continues to. It's ignorant.
Incredibly. I'm literally gratified in some way that these comments are as particularly super dated sounding as they are. Mm. You know, once upon a time, you'd hear like homophobic comments and just think, well, they're homophobic. Now, I mean, it truly sounds like comments from 35 years ago. I mean, it's just super weird that someone that young can sound so old and out of touch.
I would be honored if he had a fresh homophobic take. I'm dying. Just get in a writer's room. Get all the toxic black men in a writer's room.
Let's punch this up.
Let's go. Come on, drawing board. Please, I need something fresh. I need something fresh.
Yes, he was called out, of course, by T.S. Madison, among others, for the ignorance and the fact that in an era where we're worried about people needing to get fucking vaccinated, continuing to spread like misinformation about disease is really just stupid. It's even worse maybe than bringing Tory Lanez out on stage, which he also did.
Which we will get. Ooh. You know what I think is the worst part about this is, so he goes on to say, and shouts out to all of y'all who aren't sucking dick in the parking lot. Sir, that sounds anecdotal. What were you doing before you got on stage? Sir, what were you doing?
Why was it on his mind?
Why is it fresh at the forefront of the front lobe? Okay. What happened? What happened? I get so frustrated.
But did he like pull into a CVS one time and see it? Like, how did this even come to front of mind?
I love that this is also after he said, ladies, if your pussy smell like water, put your cell phone lighter up. What the fuck does water smell like?
The smell of water. My favorite Sally Hawkins film.
Donatello Versace, what's your favorite movie? That would be The Smell of Water.
The Smell of Water.
You guys got to look up Donatella Versace's 73 questions if you're not yeah. familiar with the reference. Well, but also, you said it's after all this. How about this is after him killing it on that Dua Lipa song, which implies that you are an ally if you participate in a Dua Lipa song. And so this feels like double-crossing in a major way, particularly after taking Madonna's place on the original remix.
To be fair, you are either an ally or a dead person with no will to fight back, because that is why Dua Lipa is on a Pop Smoke song. Currently.
Everything, that's why we hit saturation point. The pop world is in shambles. We all just need to stop.
Yeah, it is wild to go from being on the Levitating remix to this, which, by the way, sucks.
You don't like the Dua Lipa remix?
Okay. The Dua Lipa remix, the Levitating one, like, DaBaby's verse is useless. I don't know the lyrics to it. And it's like,
I think it's good.
You do?
Yeah.
It's not giving me Snoop Dogg on Buttons.
Did I say, oh no. Well, we're not talking about the Bible now.
Ashley Nicole, Jessica, Kimberly, you're telling me? Kimberly Melody, you're telling me.
You forgot Kermit. Yeah.
didn't need him on the remix. Didn't need him on the Grammy stage with her. Don't ever need DaBaby anywhere at all.
Yeah. And I will also say that there is a fan edit of Megan Thee Stallion's verse from the song Fucking Around, which people have laced onto Levitating, which sounds so much better than DaBaby's. So,
sorry, phony people. You know, we snatching
and
it.
Speaking of our girl... The fact that, we've talked about this before, the fact that she has, you know, sort of like elevated him so much with Cash Shit and Cry Baby, and he continues to be a disrespectful piece of shit is so unfortunate. Bring Tory Lanez out on stage.
He has to have the attention span of a gerbil, a young gerbil, because I don't understand how you could forget what's going on in moments, in a matter of seconds. I don't get it. I'm so frustrated with this man. I hate even talking about him because I'm weary.
The music doesn't slap as much as it needs to. I just like...
It's the gimmicks. It's the gimmicks. It's the dusty ass...
He's useless. It's the gimmicks. It's the gimmicks for me. I remember the time that I saw him at Camp Flognaw and they were just like two large babes, like people dressed up as babies.
What are you doing?
Just bopping around on stage at inflatable babies. What is this?
What are you giving? You're giving nothing.
Oh, we didn't address that. At some point, someone threw a shoe at him.
Oh, yeah. You was and like, Adidas. Goddamn Adidas shoe. And me in the crowd, barefoot on one foot, just like, I don't know, looking around. You know what I love about the shoe, the shoe throwing as well, is somebody had to do the calculation of, do I want to throw this shoe? Am I cool with roaming around this dirty ass Rolling Loud arena with a bare soul exposed to the Miami ground?
And they were.
And they chose throwing. They got that pitcher's arm out and threw that shit.
I just want them to drop a Venmo. I want to send them something.
Yeah, right.
They're going to make $1 million. Don't do that.
And also, it's so delightfully old school. It reminds me of, like, you know, when Garfield performs on the fence and people throw tomatoes at him. It's like, oh, that's so classically vaudeville, you know?
Do you think just people just go buying up tickets to DaBaby shows to throw shoes at him from now on? I would love it.
We should all be embracing our inner Cardi B and throwing some shoes, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll throw a Louboutin.
Oh, you're starting high.
I got a Bottega. I'm ripping this Bottega off. It's going straight across the room.
This is the new Decathlon. Yeah, the shot put is over. Adidas is in.
Did you guys see his Instagram post where he fixed his goofy little face to be like, well, my gay fans know that they don't have AIDS, so
what
I have gay
fuck?
Fans. And actually, what I said was simply a call to action.
What was the action?
Hopefully to leave.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
He was like, I didn't see that many lights go up, so that's how I know that none of my fans have AIDS. You are consistently the dumbest person I've ever listened to in my life.
Oh my God.
And fee fi fo fum, here T.I. come.
We didn't see your cell phone lighter go up either, DaBaby.
Where was your iPhone?
That's all I have to say about that. So I'll meet you in the parking lot.
Your pussy don't smell like water.
I'll meet you in the parking lot. The best part about DaBaby is, like, he ain't even got to get on his knees in the parking lot. He's so short.
Oh, my God.
He's already there.
He's already at dick level.
This original Queens of Comedy content.
All right, we're back.
Well,
Sanaa Lathan joins us, and we'll try to be slightly less ignorant. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations. There's no limit to the range of black stories, black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the black experience sound like a 3-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts.
Our guest today has a packed trophy case. A Tony and Independent Spirit Award nominee, a BET Award winner with multiple NAACP Image Awards. She's a voiceover artist, a movie star, and a TV staple. You can catch her on Netflix's new series, Hit and Run, beginning August 6th. Please welcome Sanaa Lathan.
Hi, I like that.
Hello.
That was a nice intro. I was like,
hello, Sanaa.
You're like, that was pleasing.
Yeah, very nice.
You know, when I look through your filmography and like TV universe, it's a varied amount of roles. But honestly, when I see and reminded of how much you've done on Family Guy, I still wonder, is that the most challenging role you've ever had to do?
Actually, it's the opposite. It is so much fun, and it's actually not challenging. We just laugh. It doesn't feel like a job. Can't believe it's been going on for this long. I can do it from anywhere in the world. And it's funny because, you know, when those people come up with, I don't know what they're called, but they're the people who always have pictures of you if you do some kind of event, and they'll have different characters. And Donna Tubb has her headshot, and she's always in the mix. So Donna Tubbs is definitely beloved around the world. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing when I'm watching a Cleveland show or Family Guy and you pop up. It's just, it adds to the episode for sure.
Mm. Yeah, she's very sassy and she's got a high self-confidence, you know. Mm-hmm.
I always just wonder if people who do voiceover like come home and they are utterly exhausted from probably having to do the same take, what, like 25 times or something? Mm.
You know what? It's not that. I mean, I think after a certain amount of time, she just comes out when it's time. And, you know, those guys over there at Family Guy and Cleveland Show, they are some of the smartest and also just, they're kind of like grown up, like little boys, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's so much fun to go over there. You go, and even in the waiting room, it's like there's bowls of like candy. Chocolate, you know, everything mm-hmm. that kind of reminds you of just having fun and being carefree. So I'm just so happy. I almost didn't go to that audition.
Really? Mm.
Yes. My whole career, every time I would go on a voiceover audition and I went to hundreds and hundreds, I never got it. I didn't even get close. And so when that came up, I remember it was a last minute thing. It may have been on a Saturday. Or it was last minute. And I, you know, I was like, no, I'm not going to get it. So I'm not going to go. And my agent was like, no, you should, this is one that maybe you should just shoot your shot. Mm-hmm. And I got it. So it's kind of scary how you can just, you know, like talk yourself, like that turned out to be so great. almost talk yourself out of it.
I imagine a hard thing about being an actor, though, is like when you go on auditions like that all the time, like, and you get the same result all these amount of times, your brain makes this decision to internalize that or rationalize it as, oh, I'm not supposed to get roles like this or whatever. When in fact, it just happened those times, you know?
It just happened those times. And yeah, it just wasn't the right one. I just talked, I have a good girlfriend who I went to drama school with, and she's been really frustrated lately, just putting herself on tape for a lot of auditions, doing such a great job. She's knowing she's doing such a great job and then not hearing anything. And she called me the other day, and it was a big show. And she's like, I'm not going to do it because I'm not right for it. And I was like, no. And I talked her into going for it, and she got the job. And she was, thank you so much, because... That was the one where she was finally like, I can't do it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about your career as a motivational speaker?
I know, right?
Yeah.
I'm like that for all my friends. I know, I have to write some books. You know what? And the reason why I believe that that is definitely somewhere in my future, not only because I do it in my daily life with my friends and family, but because I needed that in order to survive. As a Black woman in this world, as an actress, I needed all of this kind of support. I've had lots of therapy. I've had life coaches. I've read every book. I call myself like a spiritual seeker. That's just what I needed to be here still.
Your career, too, is so interesting to me because I feel like, you know, where at least I first got to know you was as, you know, sort of this romantic comedy, romantic drama star. And it's so interesting even looking back on like Best Man Holiday, Love and Basketball, Brown Sugar, Something New, and being like, this was really a space that was being carved out that didn't really sort of exist before. And you were the one doing it. And I really want to know like what it was like auditioning for those kinds of films before those came along, because it was probably a lot of, you know, like white rom-coms you're auditioning for. And then this comes along and it's just like, oh no, we're doing our own films and they're classics. People are still talking about them.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, I don't know. I don't know if there's destiny involved or I had gotten into the business. I came from the theater. I had done the best thing about the drama school education. It's 3 years, but like by the end of those 3 years, you have done close to 30 plays from small black box theaters to big regional stages with from Shakespeare to new playwrights. And so
at Yale, too.
At Yale School of Drama. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's not talk
that's
about
right. That's right. About that. By the time you leave that experience, I mean, it's so rigorous that you're almost more comfortable creating a character and being on stage than you are in your own skin. And so for me, I was like a newbie to Hollywood, but I was not necessarily, you know, a beginner actress. And so people always kind of see people's success, but they don't know all the rejection that went into to this day. You know, I don't envy anybody's success any at any level because we don't know what's on the other side and what it took to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Wood, Rick Famuyiwa wrote and directed The Wood. And that was another one because I was just starting to work a little bit and I had gotten a series that was like a 1 week part in this. And I felt like I was, you know, further than that. And that was another one where my agent was like, just go do it. And I met Tay there and I met Omar there. And obviously that turned out to be kind of a classic as well. I feel like knowing Tay, I had to read with Tay for The Best Man. They actually wanted me to come in for Candy, the role, the stripper role that Regina Hall wound up doing. It was the first time that I said, you know what, I really want to go in for Robin. And I didn't know if that was going to be like, if they were going to say yes. And they were like, yeah. So I went in for Robin. I'm sure that knowing Tay and the chemistry that we had in my audition helped to get that. And then Love and Basketball, Gina wrote Love and Basketball with Omar in mind. We were dating and didn't say anything. So I was auditioning while he had the role. And because people have different ideas of what chemistry is. People have, to me, you know, coming from the theater, you can, you make your chemistry. I'm not a believer in, oh, if you're dating, you don't have chemistry. Or if you're not, you know, there was all these beliefs. And I knew that it could jeopardize me possibly getting the role if they knew we were dating. So we just kept it under wraps. She didn't find out until the middle of shooting. She was like, wait a second.
y'all close.
She wanted a basketball player who could act. Mm-hmm. The only reason why I got, and this is where I feel like there's some kind of destiny involved, because the only reason why I even got a shot to audition for Love and Basketball is because one day, she, years before she even had her deal, she had a table read for the script to hear it out loud in front of an audience. And the actress got sick who was supposed to read Monica.
Oh, wow.
And she had heard about me and got my number and tracked me down and was like, can you, you know, take her place? And I was like, okay, fine. You know, somebody said the script was good. Mm-hmm. And we did it. Me coming from doing a lot of those kind of readings, I, you know, gave my all and I really put, you know, I created the character. And then she went off, got her deal a couple of years later, wasn't really seeing a lot of actresses. She was seeing mainly basketball players. But because I had done the reading, she let me come in because she liked my reading. And so, you know, those are the kind of things where you're like, wait a second, that is crazy how there were so many near misses.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool when actors like allow us to see behind the scenes and the process of how they got their role. So that's still interesting. And especially for that role, I think about you and Gabrielle Union and Regina mm-hmm. Hall and these people who I consider these Black legacy actors that were working at what I think is the peak of our genre. And how many Black women you inspired to continue acting and start acting because they saw themselves in you.
Aww.
Myself even watching Love and Basketball and being like, oh my God.
Aww, I love
so
it.
You can know what you want. You can be aggressive and still be a feminine woman. Like all of that was moving for me. And I kind of wanted to ask you, do you feel that legacy still? Like, do you feel the footprint that's left on Black Hollywood and how the culture has changed because of it?
When I was coming up, there were like five of us, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm friends with a lot of them, like real friends, like Regina and Gab and Nia. We're all, you know, we all get on the phone. And so it's nice every now and then to kind of talk about like, wow, this was really cool that we were the ones that were able to do something different in the history of film, you know? But you don't, you're just living your life like everybody else. Every day it brings its challenges. I'm not walking around thinking, you know, when people say what a movie means to them, that makes me feel good. And because of Twitter, I know when every one of my movies is is playing. So that makes me feel good. And it just makes me want to keep moving forward. I really, truly believe in the power of representation, of being able to see yourself reflected. I was around as a little kid. My mom was in the original Alvin Ailey Company, and she was on Broadway with Eartha Kitt and Stephanie Mills. Eartha Kitt, she did Timbuktu with Eartha Kitt. I was like a toddler behind the scenes and watching that show over and over. And then Stephanie Mills, my mother was in the chorus for The Wiz on Broadway. And so I got to see as a little toddler, Black women reflected to me. And so I definitely know that benefited me in terms of a subconscious belief that it was possible. And so I'm really happy about this moment now after Black Lives Matter. You know, we are requiring now that we, you know, there's a minimum of representation because, you know, it's so important to self-worth and self-esteem to see yourself reflected.
You've now brought up Stephanie Mills, so I must bring up the song Bit by Bit from the Fletch soundtrack. Oh my God, slay. Everybody, guys, you have to download this.
Listen, she said Stephanie, I was thinking about I Feel Good All Over, which used to play on, which used to be One Couple on Another World's love theme, and I would see it all the time growing up when my mom would watch it.
Never knew love like this. Speaking of visibility, so the show Hit and Run, you're about to be visible on Netflix. Is there any intimidation by the sheer amount of eyes that will be suddenly watching you? I've talked about this before on the show. I have friends who they'll appear on something on Netflix, and then it turns out, oh wait, this is now what everybody watches. It's like the new internet in a way. Like everybody's eyes are fixed on this particular forum. Are you excited for that?
Well, now I'm scared. Now that you said that, I'm scared now. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't thinking that way. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. It's so funny because we shot it back in the good old days before the pandemic. You know, we shot it
the before
in 2019, and right when we shut down, we had 3 weeks left in Israel. I was finished with my part. We shot it in New York. And Lior Raz is like, you know, the biggest star in Israel. And he had a huge hit on Netflix called Fauda, which when I got the offer, I hadn't seen. And I mean, my mother binged it and she was like, "Ooh, he's, you know, he's sexy, something sexy about that man, you know." And then my, you know, my brother had watched it twice. So he has, you know, he had a big hit on Netflix already. That was kind of exciting. And I love the idea of this. It's where the world is right now because of streaming, but like this whole idea of like cross-cultural entertainment. And so, you know, we in Hit and Run, it goes back and forth between Tel Aviv and New York. Mm-hmm. And in Tel Aviv, they're speaking in Hebrew. And so I just think that's cool. But the show, I can't wait for it to come out and for everybody to see it, because when I was reading the scripts, I would get mad. I would be like, okay, what's going to happen now? Like, even me not being in it at all. It's just, it's such an edge of your seat, fun ride.
It's so fun because I feel like the, you know, I've written for Netflix shows. I've had other friends who like work in some of the marketing there. And it's really this time where it's, everything's getting more international, and it's just you're realizing that the film world, the television world is global. It's not just Hollywood, which Hollywood makes you believe, you know, and the mixing of, you know, it being Israel and then also shot in New York. It's the alternative to, I feel like, for years we would just constantly see a procedural or show on TV that was adapted from like some Israeli or some other format, right? And now it's like, and they'll just put it on the air and people will watch it.
They will. I mean, we know that this, we're all connected because of the coronavirus. You know what I mean? Like, it really, really kind of makes you, the whole world getting shut down, it just makes you realize, yeah, we are all the human race. We are all connected, definitely in a real way. And, you know, with social media and Netflix and streaming, it's like, it's really, it's the world, it just looks completely different than it did when I was coming up, you know, as a young actress.
Mm-hmm. You know, Sanaa, one of my favorite things about you as a actress is your ability. Like, in 1 year, you'll do a television show and then go do a film and then go to TV again and do a film, and this ability to kind of ricochet between both worlds kind of like seamlessly. And I remember watching Napoli Ever After a couple years ago and then also noticing that you had a role in helping produce. So there is definitely a question I have about what's your favorite place to be in. Do you like to be a facilitator? Do you like to be in television? Do you like to be in film? Where does your heart lie?
Or do you miss theater?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many answers. Theater is my first love. The experience of playing a role from beginning to end and with an audience there, which you're feeling the energy of that audience every night, and every audience is different. That is like a thrill that you can never replace with film. And the 8 shows a week, like for me to go and do a show for, you know, 6 months, 8 shows a week, it has to be something that I cannot say no to because it's so all encompassing. I am not capable of having a life and doing that. And so, yes, it's both of those things. Now I've been in the business, you know, not including my teenage years, like, you know, damn near 30 years. It's just a natural progression to start being, you know, going to the other side, meaning, you know, behind the scenes, because, you know, just from experience, you learn so much just by doing it. And so I love all of it. I consider myself a storyteller, whether that's going to be producing, acting, directing. It's just, I definitely feel like this is part of my life purpose, and I'll be doing it till I'm a little old lady, you know. So in terms of like TV or film, there used to be, when I was coming up, kind of a snobbery about TV. And, you know, oh, no, I don't do TV. You know, I only do films. Mm. And there was kind of like a delineation. But now it's just, it's not that anymore. It's all kind of one. And I think that has to do with streaming as well. So for me, it's just about the story. It's about the script. It's about, there's so many different things. Part of me doing Hit and Run was because it was in New York City in the fall. And I was like, I want to be there. You know, and I liked, you know, the idea of doing, working with those producing partners. And so it's never one thing. It's always kind of a holistic decision.
I'm glad we're in that era, you know, because it's, you know, I mean, I remember when Viola had to talk about how she went to television to, you know, get work as a black woman. And then oddly, you know, like the other leader, white actors, you know, followed suit, you know. And I think if you have Julia Roberts and Meryl Streep doing television, you know, streaming, then there is no delineation anymore. There's no television snobbery.
Yeah.
People get to know you if you're on streamer now. That's how you become a star.
Yeah. The whole idea of a star is different too, right? It's like there still are stars, but it's just like there's not those kind of movie stars that they had back then, you know. I think what do you think that is? I don't know. Is it because there's so much content?
I think definitely the idea of celebrity is super democratized now. Like now you don't have to be an actor or you know, a movie or a TV person. Anyway, yeah, you can be somebody random and be a star too. So it's almost like the capital on what it is to be a star is now everywhere.
Shoot.
Right.
I'm famous, girl.
You sure are, Aida. You know,
I'm kidding. But I do think that, you know, with social media and accessibility kind of being through the roof, that it's difficult to maintain the allure the way that stars could in the past.
Yes.
And I think that's what really added to celebrity was the lack of accessibility.
The distance. Yeah. The mystery.
Yes. No, literally, to me, there's like six true superstars now, and they've all been superstars for like 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whereas everybody else is now this like flat level of fame. Yeah.
Who are your superstars? Who are the superstars to you?
You still have like maybe a Robert Downey Jr., you know, people in the MCU, that kind of thing. But like, I like, it's like people like Madonna, you know, et cetera. Mm.
Yeah. As far as new celebrities, they don't exist. They don't exist. Actually, I will give a little bit of credit to Zendaya.
Oh, yes. She's.
I feel like Zendaya maintains that air of untouchability. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Because she stays off the internet.
Yeah. Know? The less you give, the more you get.
It's like that thing of like you want to go. There's two brunch spots on the street and the one with the line out the thing. You want to go to that one. You don't want to go to the one. You always kind of want as a human, like you want kind of what you can't get. Right. Is that what it is?
Exclusivity is hot.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. In restaurants and in dating.
Exactly.
And in dating.
If that boy for the streets, I don't want him. They all had him. He ran through.
Sanaa, thank you so much for being here.
It was really my pleasure. This was so fun. I want to hang out with you guys all day.
And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. As usual, it's Keep It. Come on, ladies.
Come on.
We keep it?
Ooh.
Get information.
Lewis, why don't you go first?
All right.
You're on this beach.
Right. No, I'm like an intrepid, entrenched reporter here in Fire Island. I am exasperated from a weekend of truly disgusting behavior all around, disguised as community morale, which I'll allow. But my God, if you want to take away like three rights from us, it's cool. Just like just a couple rights we don't deserve, it's all right. Recently, I've had a lot of Keep Its that are about like gay cliche things. Like we've talked about how people say not this all the time, whatever. Yeah. So this is another one of those. To quote my new favorite Grace Jones song, I've done it again. My Keep It is to every conversation between gay men who are between the ages of 20 and 39, starting with the phrase, hi, gay. I don't know if you know what this is. Meg Stalter, who is a comedian you have probably seen in a supporting role on the show Hacks on HBO. Mm-hmm.
And in my dreams.
Or in every front-facing Twitter video ever.
Correct. She's sort of like the most popular front-facing Twitter comedian, who's also like a real stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. The gays are obsessed with her, and she had this one video go viral where it was mocking corporate pride and how they address gay consumers, and it begins with this woman, Meg, in character, saying, hi, gay, to the camera like that in a sort of blank, stupid way. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, she did it in a blank and stupid way, so guess who picked it up immediately? The gay community.
everywhere you go. And I've been to San Francisco Pride. I'm in Fire Island now. I'll be at Market Days next week. Guys, what is wrong with me?
Oh, Miss Carmen San Diego.
I know. Not Miss Carmen Serotonin. Let me tell you something. Here's the thing. I'm all for everybody latching onto a female comedian's viral moment. I mean, it's truly viral. I can't escape it. But my God, I have heard it every day, hundreds of times, thousands of times. So now if I hear it again, I need you to know, if you catch my eye, I will be driven to murder. Don't look at me.
Only murders on this podcast.
Yes. You know the moment in a Lifetime movie where the glint in Rob Lowe's eyes changes and you realize you're married to the wrong man? That's me. Okay?
Okay. You do have sort of a young Rob Lowe quality.
Okay.
I've never heard a better compliment in my life. Unfortunately, now my serotonin is replenished. But J fucking C. Here's gays just right now, I think, are in a moment where they love having everything in common. We love wearing the exact same shorts. We love wearing the exact same shirt. And now it's really infiltrated speech.
MCM shorts and a Jacquemus shirt.
Totally.
Oh my God.
So it's like high gay is this community thing where we all have agreed to say it, and it's just lost all meaning and lost all funny to me. And I also think a critical thing about gay men is we usually are really good at being funny in un-cliche ways. So please, if you're going to say the cliche thing, then say three more originally funny things afterwards. Please. Just for me. Just for me.
Do you think the proliferation of social media and more gays being able to connect with one another is that we've lost
it's
the need to create within our own communities and with our friend groups? Like, even us who live in LA, you know, and like friends in New York, you know, like who are supposed to be, you know, sort of the like... the literati of the gay community, like the funny ones, sort of like leading the pack, right? You could sit with them and like hear one of them say like one of these brain dead phrases, and it's like,
right,
baby, you're supposed to be funny,
right? No,
you're supposed to innovate.
The whole job of funny has changed, and like, yeah, it's not about sort of valuing the originality of a comment anymore so much as it's the pass around vibe of whatever it is. Like, we can just use it and take from it.
Mm. Maybe we're turning into straight men. I mean, this is what is high gay but quoting Anchorman at the lunch table?
Right.
The Step Brothers references. What is happening? You know, but do add it to the keep it infographic of all the things that we're tired of hearing gay people say.
Right.
You know, just be number six. High gay.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't like having things in common with every queer person around me or whatever. We've just done it too many times. Let's move on from this thing.
I think we've exceeded our desire to have community now. We're at this point. We're saturated. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
Be original again. Be original again. I know y'all are here. Everybody gay. Fine. We got here. It's 2021. Make me laugh, girl. That's what you was doing before when you was sad and closeted.
Or
I long for that.
You know, like, you also just can't associate gays with fashion anymore.
I guess that's true. Well, I don't know about that. Every time I go to, like, you know, a queer dance party or something, somebody usually impresses me with something
in the
gender blending community.
It's the party white gays. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? I think they've always been wearing the same thing since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And mostly they're all just wearing the outfits that are dead gay ancestors wore in the 80s.
You know what?
I have to say, when you look at a vintage, and by vintage I mean whatever, 1989, 1991 photo of gays in New York, sometimes it's like we are exactly there. Like the exact shorts and the exact shirt and the exact sock lengths are at play, which I kind of love. I'm not saying I don't want that to happen, but anyway. High gay and now bi gay. I've said my piece.
I was going to say, yeah, less high gay, a lot more. I'm done talking to you, gay. Bye. Yeah. And also, you know where the fashion's at. It's with the black femmes. We're at a boiler
of
room
course.
Set. We're sweating
yep. always,
each other.
Always,
we're all DJs
always.
Now. I'm a DJ. Yes. That's my reveal. I'm a DJ now. Being a black femme to DJ is right here.
I was not including, you know, like black trans people and the black femmes in this because they always turn it at an event.
Me in the same sweater I like to wear most days. I'm like, yeah, we're innovators.
Yeah, so usually we're you should look at queens. Them at like a Pines party or even like a New York party or like
yes.
some like LA warehouse one. It's like amongst the other crowd, it's like, oh, what they're wearing is probably what people will be
exactly
glomming onto and wearing in like about 5 years.
Yeah, it's like I took tires off of a Ford and pantyhose. I cut them up. And this is my outfit. And that's every lesbian that I know.
Now that you mention it, I want to say the high gay thing is pretty specific to white gays. I don't think I've heard a person of color even repeat that. So maybe
I thought we just were leaving that unsaid.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. And I knew that.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm here. I'm here. First of all,
you think a black girl came up with that shit?
But I'm Lewis. I will always defend you in the style of Jeremy O'Harris. I'm here for my white best friend. So.
You're not going to get on Rihanna's internet and discredit my good sis, Lewis Fertel.
My good sis. Out of your
Jesus
mind.
Christ.
Okay, well, let me bring it back to something else.
Bye, gay to me.
Yes.
Sorry for ever even putting you parallel. Like, no corollary is drawn between Lewis and Lena Dunham. But let me move on.
Stop. Yes.
Don't do this.
Save me now.
I was recently reminded by my mother that we are a political podcast in a certain way.
LOL.
And I don't think I've talked. I don't even know who's president right now. It could be
the body is politic, Aida.
I don't even know who's the president right now.
So I figured
Does the president know?
Okay.
I don't know. I figured I should mention a congresswoman, a politician in some way, shape, or form. And of course, it's going to be a black woman. So my keep it this week goes to, wow, big shock, some more white supremacist comments that a lovely black woman is receiving and bravely posting with a trigger warning, which is something I should start doing. We all have something to learn from Miss Cori Bush. As we all know, Cori Bush is a lovely congresswoman, nurse, activist. What hasn't this woman done of our beautiful, beautiful state of Missouri? We all love.
Start in salt, too, which is what I would love for her to do, actually. Cori, call me.
Now, I'm sure she will when she's done posting every single racist DM she's ever received, calling her, like, a porch monkey or a bed wench or whatever these weird Rudyard Kipling-ass insults pop out of nowhere.
And minor Ricky Ticky Tavi characters, yes.
Yeah. When you read these messages to her, I'm just shocked at the level of literary ability and artistry that goes into them. They're poems, okay? They are Missouri, dusty Missourian poems.
That's what Rupi Kaur was doing before she blew up.
That before she was a homebody, get her book at every Barnes & Noble. It's featured next to everything. Listen, I think it's what I don't like about it is, one, Cori is a politician and has always been very vocal about everything that happens to her. I'm tired. I'm just tired of seeing these comments. And this is coming from a black woman who just experiences. I think I'm the only one that probably feels this fatigue. So I'm sharing that with you guys lightly. But I'm tired of seeing them. I wish there was a way for me to mute not just my comments, but also the comments that my actual good sisses be receiving. And it's sad. It's sad. Especially because I come to, again, Twitter, to the Bird app, to watch screen recorded TikToks of pandas kissing. Like, I don't come for political discourse or sadness. Stop tarnishing this experience for me. It's devastating.
No, and listen, I know that you've gotten this before too, you know, from like
every time I
dusty
speak.
White people. yes, you know, yeah. Every time we talk about a white man on this podcast, and I get them less so, obviously, because I'm not a black woman, but also I have been deactivated from so many social media apps. So how can people find me? I will say that every so often I'll get like a message on my phone that says someone would like to send you a message request on like Facebook Messenger. And I'm like, no one messages me on Facebook Messenger anymore. I'm like, I'm sorry, Cletus. I'm not going to accept your message request so I can hear what you want to call me.
And the preview is like, listen here, coon.
Right. Like, okay. It's always like, where do you get off saying?
Decline. There's a special place in hell. And I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe reject this. The last thing I want to say is shouts out again, Cori Bush, because she posted all the exchanges. And in the most congresswoman way ever is just said, like, fuck y'all, go to hell. I'm going to continue to keep it pushing, which I always do. And it's what black women do without fail. So keep it to the world. And there you go. There's your politics, Phil. But I'm Anderson Cooper. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Back to sex shit, Ira. What do you, music and sex, what you got to talk about?
Well, ladies, back to music and sex. My keep it this week goes to Kanye, Omari West.
Oh, no.
It goes to the Louis Vuitton Don. But keep it goes to Kanye this week because of the delayed release of Donda. Now, no, this man did not just have us last week talking about how we were actually excited to be back on the Kanye train.
Now, for just a minute, when you said we, who did you mean? Because you couldn't have meant Louis Vuitton.
We know we weren't talking about your white ass, Louis, okay?
But throw me in there. Throw me in there. Because I kept reading those tweets about y'all in that stream just waiting like Boo Boo the Fool. No, y'all know that man's past behaviors. What were you waiting for?
Now, granted, I did not listen to the stream as it aired, but someone sent me a rip of it, and then I listened to it. Mm-hmm. He premiered Donda Thursday evening at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta where the Falcons play for an audience and just sort of danced to the music with like some pantyhose on his face. And his red MAGA gear.
Like the black lesbian that he is.
He was ready to set it off.
Yes, girl. Oh.
And then, you know, Queen Latifah pulled up and he went and hopped in the car and left. And we thought, oh, the album's about to drop. Of course, it has not dropped. And of course, I forgot that we went through this shit with The Life of Pablo.
Yeah.
Why did I forget that this is just what he does now?
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to innovate the album release process. I'm going to upload Life of Pablo, but then I'm going to change it every week so y'all will never hear Ultralight Beam the same way ever again. And now we have
still don't know if the damn album Life of Pablo sounds like how I remember it sounded. You listen to it now and you're like, what is Jesus Walks on this now? Kanye.
But it would be so like him to drop it now between the time we tape and the time it comes out. There's something so consistently and newly chaotic about him that will disturb people like us. So I know he's going to make it inconvenient for us some way.
But damn, you know what? I was back, you know, to like listening to Kanye songs. He was a producer of Lil Nas X's Industry Baby, for one.
Oh.
But... Yeah. Damn, ain't nobody anticipating Donda this goddamn much. Just release it. If it's bad, it's bad. But baby, doing all this, I'm annoyed.
And I am hesitant to have big, big critiques. And he knows that we all feel that way because it's about his mother who had passed away years ago. Or at least the title is.
I'm not hesitant. The beginning of the album, which actually has audio from Donda, is the worst part of the album. Can you let her rest? Can he let Donda rest?
Not an album about your mother who has passed away with 20,000 male features. Not a single woman on the album. Not a single drop of femininity. What is the point? What is the point?
It's like, let it rest, baby. Because the album, I think, actually, from what I've heard, gets better as each song goes on, and it ends with a actually very stellar Jay verse, which was the shock of the moment. But what are we doing here? Like, remember when he was selling the Rest in Peace Donda shirts?
Right, yes.
And then on the back it said, Rest in Peace Robert Kardashian.
Mother of God. Wait, I actually have a Donda-related question. What is your retroactive take on the album 808s and Heartbreak? Because at the time...
Amazing.
It was considered like the streak-breaking one, right? Like he had the massive sort of critical successes of the albums before, and then that sort of blunted it, even if, Love Lockdown still... one of his most fabulous singles, I would say.
I think it's a brilliant album. And I saw it at the Hollywood Bowl when he did the two-night presentation of the album. Like, he did, like the whole concert was the album. And it makes me wish that more art... I know a few artists have done shows like that, but I wish more artists would take one of their either classic albums that everyone wants to see or an album like that, which, you know, isn't as... highly remembered or wasn't as successful as all the other ones, and just the entire concert was you doing all the songs from that album in a row.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was mesmerizing and it was great to be immersed in the album in a completely different way. And I'm like, I'm sure you've got plenty of artists that you would love to hear do that, Lewis.
Lewis, don't say the Carpenters. I'm begging.
Well, Karen's dead. So, you know... Unless her brother John Carpenter is going to put some of her music into one of his films.
No.
Or drop an album called Karen.
Liz Phair years ago did Exile in Guyville all the way through at a concert in Chicago that I saw. And that was great because Exile in Guyville is her signature album. It's the one people still reference the most or whatever. But you would never hear it from her just track by track in a row at a concert. And it felt like I was hearing the songs in a new way, for one thing. But two, hearing how they meant something to her still, as opposed to when I just listened to the album in my car and I'm transported back to 1993. You know, so that's fabulous. By the way, I interviewed Liz Phair on NPR. You can listen to that interview on Bullseye.
Lewis, ain't nobody going. No, I'm kidding.
It was actually a good interview. It was a good interview.
Congrats. Oh, thanks.
Yeah. You know I listened.
You know she's one of my faves. I don't think I've listened yet. I'm too nervous to listen to it.
Aw. You sound great.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's here we're like fucking around and I'm just like saying things that get us all canceled all the time. I'm fine with that. But I'm talking with somebody I respect now, so you know it's different.
Anyway, Con Yeezy. Mm-hmm. Just give us a damn album, or don't. But stop living in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, mixing it, baby. Go home
and drop your Gap line. You're literally wearing it around. Actually, you know what? That red outfit probably was from his Yeezy Gap line. That might be part of it all.
It's I bought my first pair of Yeezys recently.
The foam runners, or what you got?
I got the 2019 Yeezy Boosts. The white, black, and reds.
Mm, okay, and how you feel? You snobbing around?
You know what? I bought them after my dermatologist was wearing them, and he was walking around in them, and I was like, you know what? These actually do look cute. So I went and had to cop that.
By the way, specific LA phenomenon of going to a medical professional and being intimidated by their fashion sense. That is
yes,
like, yeah.
It's like, sir, you. It's like, sir, you are supposed to be wearing just like a lab coat, and they usually are. Like, my dentist just wears like her lab coat. I was just this gorgeous Indian woman who then put like the, you know, like the bangles, you know, like a necklace, like the shoes. It's always giving you like, oh, that's why my Invisalign costs so much.
There you go.
So you can wear Gucci.
One of my doctors walked into the room with her like cinched as hell scrubs. I didn't even know they made them fitted like this. And I literally have to restrain myself from muttering stunning under my breath.
Not her with the vintage Hervé Légère scrubs. But yes, doctors in LA do that to you. And that is how they make you spend money on making yourself look better.
And they are doing it well.
Yeah. But I will also point out the 2021 phenomenon is not the plastic surgeon, baby. The dermatologist.
Mm-hmm.
Get you a good
need.
Dermatologist. Get that skin right.
That's all you need.
And then you won't have to do the injections. But if you want to, you can.
Fill me up, Scotty.
Listen,
do what you gotta
baby,
do.
Baby, I'll never say.
I'll be on to you, though.
All right. That's our show this week. Shout out to Shanaa Lathan for joining us. And we'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Caroline Reston. And our associate producer is Brian Semmel. Our executive producer is me, Ira Madison III. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nar Melkonian, and Milo Kim for production support every week. And hey, stay safe out there.